Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. And this is the second Thursday in the month, so that means that we talk about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And here in studio with us are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, who specializes in residential renovation projects. Ken, a pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you too, Jim.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg is involved with historic restoration, water issues, and is a licensed home inspector as well. John, it's a pleasure to see you too.
Great to be back, Jim.
And if people have questions about home renovation, home repair, home inspection issues, those kinds of things, we'd be happy to entertain your questions and your comments in Madison. It's a local number at 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. The New York Times carried quite a story on December 3rd dealing with warm bathroom floors. Kits containing flexible mats are being sold to both professional contractors and do-it-yourselfers. They seem to run about $10 a square foot. Ken, do you have experience with these in-floor heating systems?
I do, and I love to walk on them in my bare feet on a cold day because it does keep the room pretty nicely warm. They usually put them in if you have gas heat, you have regular forced air heat, and you want to just tweak your bathroom a little bit, the electric baseboard or the electric underfloor heat is what it is. It's a mat that sits underneath the tile, embedded in mortar, and there's the cost of the tile work, the cost of the matting with the heat membrane in it, and the cost of hooking it up to the electrical circuit. It works. They work really well. They're very efficient. They're much more efficient than a little electric baseboard heater or the heat that blows out of the ceiling if you've got an electric element in your exhaust fan.
So they're usually used under a tile floor?
Well, you can use them under other floors, too. I've seen them being used under wood floors. I've seen them used under cork. It's common. You see them in kitchens and baths a lot, and you don't usually use wood floors in bathrooms, so you see them under tile quite frequently.
The New York Times story estimated the cost at about $10 a square foot. As I saw, you thought that was a little low.
Well, it's sort of in the ballpark. That's the cost of the materials and installation for the unit itself. Then there's another small charge from the electrician to hook it up, and that could be, I guess, it could be small or large depending on how elaborate you have to. You know, how much work it is to get the wiring to this location, basically.
So what you're saying is that a professional certainly should do the electrical work.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And if you'd like to join the conversation, I see there are a couple of lines open, although the calls are starting to come in. And the number in Madison for you is 263-1890. If you're outside of the Madison area, it's a toll-free number at 800-642-1234 as we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Let's start off with Jim in Green Bay. Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hi, yes. I'm living in a rental property, and the landlady is reluctant in repairing some of the problems there. We have a window that has, we have leaking windows, and she's not putting the windows back on. Also, we have bare wires, exposed wires in our electrical outlets, lights off the ceiling. What can we do?
John, what do you think about that?
Well, this sounds like it's an issue. It sounds like there's some code violations there. And now, I don't know, Jim, what the city of Green Bay has. In the city of Madison, we actually have rental inspectors. We have what's called a minimum housing code. And you can call the city, and if there's something unsafe, they will send an inspector. They will look at it, they will write it up, and send a work order to your landlord. I think the first thing I would do is call your building department there in Green Bay, tell them what your problem is, and say, how can you help me? And I'm sure that they're going to find some way, especially if you've got something life-threatening, such as bare wires. Give the city a call, and would certainly think that they're going to give you some aid.
Okay.
I think that's the way to proceed.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. Ken, how do you know when a hardwood floor should be refinished? I mean, you can look at it and see, you know, maybe that it's dulling somewhat, but when would you refinish the floor?
Well, in my house, I do it when my wife tells me to. So it's usually they get scratched up. The finish is starting to wear off. There could be stains. You know, it's just starting to look tired. And then you would want to, you know, perk it up a little bit. To do that, a lot of times when the floor is in not very bad shape, it could just be, brush it with a, like a scrubby. It's like a, you know, giant round scrubby, mm-hmm. and then put another coat of finish on. But you have to be careful because the finish has to be compatible with the previous finish. If you have to sand it all down to bare wood, it's not an easy job to do. It seems simple, but it's a very easy job to mess up. So I kind of leave this one to a professional.
And as far as the application on the hardwood floor, would you use polyurethane or an oil or maybe some other product?
Well, there again, that depends on what the previous finish was like. If you're just going to resurface it, you want to research and find out what the old surface is like, or the material it was, and make sure they're compatible. If it's a new floor or a refinish, there's a lot of really good water-based sealants out there and finishes. I know Bona is a product that does, I think they used to call them Swedish finish, didn't they, at one mm-hmm. time?
That's right.
And John knows a lot about this, about floor finishes, I think, don't you, John?
Well, we certainly use a lot of it, and mm-hmm. I think that we almost never use oil-based finishes anymore.
No.
The old oil finishes, the good ones, always layered. So as Ken said, you had to be really careful when you recoated them. Mm-hmm. You had to abrade them heavily to make anything stick. The water-based ones are absolutely wonderful.
And they hold up just as well as better.
They hold up as well, and we have an old house and an old kitchen and very bad traffic patterns where the floor wears, and every 2 years we take a little green scrubby out and just redo the traffic patterns without the rest. And what we find is that these water-type finishes like Bona and Glitza bond in very nicely. They match the sheen, and they're really wonderful products. And we don't have the off-gassing of hydrocarbon vapors like we used to. We're just getting water vapor off. So some huge advances have been made in the floor finishing.
Absolutely. And they use these finishes on basketball courts, and, you know, that works just fine. Mm-hmm. So just because it's water-based, it doesn't mean that it's a lighter duty.
Our guests are Ken Adams and John Freiberger, and let's go back to the phones to Diane in northwest Wisconsin next. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I have a question about, I heard something discussed once before on your show about some pumps in the basement, and I wasn't able to hear all the discussion. I have an uncovered one. The house is from about 1973. And first of all, I would like to know why do you have to have it covered? And secondly, how do you go about doing that?
The concern that we have with sump pits and the drain lines that are probably connected to them, if your house was built in 73, you probably have a perforated pipe that runs all the way around the outside and the inside of your foundation. And this is to collect excess water in the soil and drain it into that sump pit so it can be pumped out. The problem is it also can collect soil gases, including radon. And if you are in a sandy or gravelly or fractured stone soil, you may have your water collection system may be acting as a radon collection system. Now, I don't know what part of northwest Wisconsin you lived in. Even if you told me, I wouldn't know what the radon characteristics were in your soil. But you may want to, for about $35 to $50, purchase a six-month radon test kit and put it in the basement. If it turns out you do have a high level of radon, then you'll want to call your plumber and have him put a sealed cover on the sump pit and also install a vent that goes to the outside. And they usually put in a little fan as well that turns sort of slowly and doesn't use much power. But basically what it does is it creates a negative air pressure in this perforated pipe underneath your house. So you then turn your system into a radon collection system that is taking the water vapor, the radon, and everything else coming through the soil, and you're pumping it outside and improving your indoor air quality. To know whether you need to do that, though, you probably should go ahead and do a radon test kit, because I wouldn't just cover it just to cover it.
Right. I did a short-term radon test kit, and it was a little elevated in that area where that sump pump is, and upstairs it was totally negative. So you may have a point there that I need to look into.
Yes, and the short-term kits are suggestive only. They really don't give you any data, but you're going to spend at the most $50 for a six-month kit, including the lab test. So it's a real good investment. It sounds like your house may be okay, but that'll give you a little bit of assurance.
Okay, thank
you. All right, thanks very much for the call, Diane. We appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Shannon in Minneapolis next. Hello, Shannon.
My family's cabin is pre-season right now. We are looking.
Oh, Shannon, that's a bad cell connection, and you're going to have to call back because you're no longer in our audience. In Madison, 263-1890 is the number, and elsewhere it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's go next to Kate in La Crosse. And Kate, go ahead.
Yes, I have. We moved into our house a few years ago, and we have yet to redo our bathroom. And when we moved in, the walls, the shower walls are fine. We just need a smooth surface on the bottom of our tub. The tub itself is fine, but there's probably a patch about, a foot by a foot where the enamel must have worn off. And I'm wondering, instead of, if there's a way, instead of having my whole bathtub, redone, like a bath sitter type thing, if there's any type of, like a paint or anything. I'm not good with houses, so.
A patching kit of some sort.
Yeah,
huh?
Just to make so my bathtub has a smooth surface.
Ken?
Sure. There's, Kate, there's a couple different routes you can go. There's a company that sells a bathtub insert that sets into your bathtub, and then they mold it around, and it's like a new coating inside the tub. I think it comes as a solid. That's one option. I don't have any experience with that, but I've heard people say that it buys them some time before they have to really remodel it. Another one that I do have some experience with is it's an epoxy-based spray-on, some sort of an enamel that looks a lot like a ceramic finish. You spray this on. Well, you don't do it. You'd have to hire it out. I think the last time I had it done was about three or four, maybe $450, something like that, which is far cheaper than pulling the tub out and replacing it. And that, even though the finish is a little softer than the ceramic finish, it will scratch if you beat it hard, say with washing old blinds in it or something like that. But it does hold up very well under normal conditions and will probably buy you several years before you have to actually replace it.
Yeah. We're trying to get it done in the next few weeks, so that's why we're trying to find
the easiest
route.
Yeah,
having to replace the whole bathtub.
Well, I don't know how busy people are up there in La Crosse, but I wouldn't try to get it done too fast because there's an old saying in construction: you got good, fast, and cheap, and you're not going to be able to get all three. So you might want to find somebody that's going to do the best quality job, because you'll be happier with that, even if it's a little bit more money and takes a little longer to get them in there.
Okay, where would I find someone that would do something like that? I know where to look for, like, the bath fitters.
I think if you look under bathtub refinishers, there's a category in the Yellow Pages.
In the Yellow Pages, sure.
Oh, okay.
You could do a web search, too, but, you'd probably be just fine with the Yellow Pages. And then interview them and definitely get a reference or two and check them out. That's always a good thing to do. It gives you peace of mind and more confidence.
We're moving out of state in a few weeks, that's why.
I'm sorry?
We're moving out of state in a few weeks. So you needed to
get it done beforehand.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I'm sure we can do it.
Okay.
So we're still going to be owning the house, so.
Yeah.
We can plan it out there, too. So.
All right, Katie.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very
Good
much for
you.
your call. Our guests are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, Wisconsin. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, we're toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's go next to Jack in Eagle River. Jack, what can we do for you today?
Yes, good morning. My question relates to my basement walls. We have a house that's pushing 100, And the composition of the foundations is sand and gravel. And I've noticed in many other homes around this area, it's mostly cinder blocks or some kind of blocks, maybe even some bricks. So I haven't even found another home that looks that way. So my question is, the surface of it seems to be like stucco. At least it's like a slate composition. And it's falling off, and underneath there's some crumbling of the sand. And so I temporarily at least put some mud across there, the kind of mud you'd use with drywall, just until I figured out what to do. And I'm not even worried about what's causing it at this point. I'm just trying to see if there's anything I can do to stop it.
It almost sounds, Jack, as if you have very old concrete. I mean, obviously it wouldn't be just sand and gravel or it would fall down, but there must be a cementous binder in between the sand and gravel, isn't there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have said it was concrete.
Okay.
That's right.
So what we have is a very old mixed on-site concrete, and it's seen all kinds of acid and humidity move through it over 100 years, and basically it's lost a lot of the binder in it. And it sort of is becoming sand and gravel. And it is not real easy to deal with. The problem is that this wall, I'm not sure the type of cement that's in it. It may be a mixture of lime and Portland cement. It probably is significantly demineralized. And the problem is, what do you do with it? If you coat it on the inside, I can almost guarantee that the coating is going to fall off, especially if it's a non-breathable coating, because your wall is very breathable. I think the best thing to do is probably just to keep an eye on it, do a little bit of surface patching, and then watch for the development of any serious crack problems. Occasionally, we do find that these old walls have to be replaced. The stone walls last about forever, but 100-year-old concrete does seem to have about a 100 to 150-year life.
Could you pour another wall inside the existing wall, or would that just make matters worse?
I always hate to do that, Ken, because without actually seeing Jack's house, and of course, you know, we like to fish, so it wouldn't be all that difficult to go to Eagle River in the summer.
I'm listening.
Well, we missed the cabin from Shannon in Minneapolis, so maybe we'll do something with Jack. But the concern I have, Ken, if we pour a full wall on the inside, is what happens to the moisture that is currently working out into Jack's basement. If that ends up working up into the wood, we're going to have not only a decaying foundation wall, we might have decaying ring joists and joist tails as well. So, Jack, if it's something you could take digital photos of and send it to us, I'd be very happy to look at it for you. We'd need pictures of the outside and of the inside, and if you send those to me, I'd be very happy to look at them and send you an email back. But this is a really tough problem that you have, and one that I don't want to attempt to diagnose any further on the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can I send it to you through the mail?
You certainly can.
Okay, I'm ready to write down the
Maybe we can get that from the producer.
Oh,
or should
sure.
I get
no,
it?
No, you can give it.
I can give it on the air. If you just send it to Freiberger at 2935 South Fish Hatchery Road.
Okay.
Here in Madison.
Hatchery Road, Madison.
And the zip is 53711.
And the Freiberg is F-R-Y, is it?
F-R-E-I.
F-R-E-I.
Right.
B-U-R-G-R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Be happy to take a look at it for you, and it's always good to educate ourselves on these things.
Yeah. All right. Jack, good luck to you.
Oh, boy, it sounds like I'll need it.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. And on to Robin in Oshkosh. Robin, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I've got a basement problem, too. I want to paint my basement, make it all sparkly-looking. It's made of concrete block, and it's been painted before, and that's gotten all flaky and shabby and crummy looking. And I have two questions. One is, I have little pieces of leftover paint from over the years, and I'm wondering if I can just mix those all together and slap whatever color that turns out to be on the walls, because it's a mix of flat paint and semi-gloss and that kind of thing. It's all latex. That's my first question. My second question is general. Do you have any advice about how I should go about this to make it fast and easy?
John's looking at me, and the question about the paint, you could try it. The problem is when paint gets old, there's going to be a lot of particulates in it. It's going to be hard to mix, and you also run the risk of mixing paints that are not compatible. The obvious one is an oil-based paint with a latex paint. And then also there's a third issue there, and that's that certain paints are made for painting onto cementitious materials, and other paints just won't hold up. So I would sort of advise against it. No, I would definitely advise against it. And paint's not expensive. The expensive part about painting is the labor, and if you're providing your own labor, you know, it's not that much money to buy a couple gallons of really good quality cement paint or a paint that's you can apply to a cementitious finish.
Do I buy a special kind of paint for that then?
Make sure it applies to concrete or to cement.
Yeah. And there's an additional consideration as well, Robin, is that most paints, latex-based paints, are food for mold. So if your basement tends to be damp and you paint the walls, you could end up basically feeding mold or mildew down there. The paints that we recommend are actually silicate-based paints. And a very common one you can get at most lumber yards is called ThoroSeal. It's ThoroSeal. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a powder that you get, and you mix it into a paint. You can put some bonding agents with it. And that has nothing in it on which fungi can possibly live. Now, you'd have to really clean this old basement of yours first, the walls. You might have to power wash them to get
the
old paint off. But then you could put on...
Power wash a basement?
Well, certainly. As long as you've got... This isn't a finished basement, is it?
Well, some of the floors, it has tile on it. I don't know what you count as finished.
Well, depending upon the type of the tile, a lot of the old vinyl asbestos 9x9 tiles were pretty resistant to a one-time wetting. But I think what you want to do is try to prep these walls so they're nice and clean, get off all old mold, mildew, other fungi, old paint, and then apply a ThoroSeal or a Kilms or one of the other silicate-based paints. Now, you'll find that most brick yards are incredibly helpful as far as customer service. And if you stop to, there's a couple of very good brick yards in Oshkosh, and if you go up to either of them and say, look, here's what I want to do, they're going to be able to sell you the material, give you all the installation instructions, and some really good advice. You're going to find a very limited choice of colors. Usually it's white or gray. But that's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yes. Thank you very much.
All right, Robin. Good luck to you. And thanks very much for your call. The number in Madison for you is 263-1890. Otherwise, we're toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's go to, I bet it's Angel in Cudahy.
Yes.
Is it Angel or Angel?
Angel is fine.
Okay, Angel.
I'm calling. I have a home that was built in 1951, and we just had the basement refinished, and we just started getting some groundwater infiltration into the basement. I was wondering if there's any easy way to find a way to diagnose it or see where it's coming from.
Well, there's a couple things you can do. The first thing I would do is look outside. Are your gutters working properly? Is water draining away from the house?
Yeah, I checked the grading outside, and all the downspouts and everything are pointed away from that area. It's on the west side of my house, and everything is drained to the north and south.
Okay, and then another question is how is the grade in relationship to the house? Is the ground...
I would say it's probably, the grading isn't all the way up to the top of the block. There's about 18 inches of block showing, and I'd say probably 2% grade.
Oh, okay, so it grades away from the building nicely,
yeah.
Too. And then do you know if the house was built in the 50s, so you probably don't have a drain tile around it, I would think.
I have a sump in there.
You do have a sump?
I do have a sump, yes. Mm-hmm. I have a sump and a pump.
Is it working?
Yeah, it does. It kicks in all the time.
So your water may be coming from above? What do you think, Jen?
There were drain tile in the 50s. There were both clay tile, and there's also permeable cement tile. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that over the years, they may have become filled with silt. Mm-hmm. And probably the first thing to do, Angel, is to look in your sump pit and see if you can find a couple of what look like ports where the drain tile is supposed to be draining. And if they're no longer working, that could be the problem. Because it sounds like from your description that this leaking came as a bit of a surprise, that this house has not leaked in the past.
No, actually, it hadn't. It didn't. The basement was finished in May of 06, and it was pretty dry for a while, and then we had a really hard rain, and all of a sudden we noticed some water.
And so, what sort of walls do you have on your basement, Angel?
It's a studded 2x4 walls with half-inch drywall on it.
And is that over poured concrete or over concrete block?
It's over concrete block.
Concrete block. Okay. And concrete block can tend to be rather leaky because it is rather porous. I guess the first thing to do, it's really hard to diagnose without seeing it. And sometimes, of course, when you're even in somebody's basement, you can't see where the water is coming in. Mm-hmm. We don't know whether it is groundwater that's coming up where the floor meets the wall or whether it might be surface water that's coming through the wall and just, you know, running down the inside of the wall till it hits the floor and comes across. So I think the first thing to do, because it's easy, is check the sump pit. If the drain tiles, you could have somebody run a video through the drain tiles to make sure that they're working correctly. If those are clear, then we probably have some surface water, but it sounds like you've done a really good job already of draining the roof and mm-hmm. and draining the grade.
Well, yeah. Does any of the water come down the walls or just seeing it on the floor?
I'm just seeing it on the floor. There's like a half-inch gap between the floor and the drywall. Because,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
you know, I was afraid that if maybe the future
handy.
I wouldn't have any, so it wouldn't wick the water up.
Right, because your drywall would have been destroyed.
Yeah. And I felt on the drywall, I got a vapor barrier on there also. I got insulation and like 6 mil plastic on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I just want to avoid having to rip that wall out.
Well, you might not have to if John's correct, if you know, in his assumption that, or in his guess that there may be silt in your drain tiles, and that if that's a matter of cleaning that out and getting the sump to work, you might be fine. There again, you might have missed something. If you said it only leaked after a heavy rain, there's a possibility that someplace water is allowed to come up to the building and run down the wall and then come in right at the bottom of the wall. So, yeah, John's right. I'd start with the sump pump and then look around the building very carefully one more time.
Okay.
All
Thank
right.
You very much.
Yeah,
good luck,
Angel. Thanks very much for your call. And let's see what's on Jane's mind in Menominee. Hello, Jane.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Another basement issue. We actually do live in a cottage on a lake, and it was an old place. We want to add on, and what we're finding is that we are on, well, it looked like we were on a slab of cement, only to find out that there's actually, is it just the wood boards that go underneath your floors rather than being on solid cement? Does that make sense?
Mm. No, would you say that again?
Well, it looks like our house is on a slab of cement.
Okay.
And our first builders that came in, because we were going to put a second story on, found out that it's not solid cement. It's actually, I think they called it a floating foundation.
So that's not on a frost footing?
So it's a floating slab, in other words, rather than a slab supported by a frost footing.
I guess, you know, you're talking to a very unknowledgeable person.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't have the footings that go down real deep.
Sure.
Below the frost line. Yeah, you don't have footings that go down below the frost line.
Right.
And that is still a very common way of supporting buildings. In fact, many large commercial buildings are actually on floating slabs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The problem that you have here is you're going to have somebody knowledgeable look at the quality of that slab. Generally, what they had, Jane, is that in the middle of the house there's only 2 or 3 inches of concrete, but when you get to the outside walls, there may be a foot or 16 inches, and sometimes there's steel rebar in there as well, so that there is a structurally very solid exterior ring on this floating slab.
And we already know that there probably isn't, because they could not put on the second story.
Okay.
They said what we had would not support a second story.
Okay. Who said that to you?
A builder, you know, a regular contract builder. Mm-hmm. You know, we were going pretty professional and all that kind of stuff. And we got pretty far into the process before they really looked down, because it looked like it was going to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they started looking, it was, you know, we've got to put in the whole foundation, you know, the $10,000 or $12,000 worth of work if we were going to put on a second story.
Mm-hmm.
So now our plan B is maybe just to add on to the side of this old house. And is that going to be an issue with foundations? Can they do the kind of foundation we have and just continue it out? Or are they going to have to do more work again to just build on?
I think that considering the type of foundation you have, now one nice thing about those foundations is that they will move. And if you put a frost-type foundation, a frost-free foundation, it may not move the same way that your existing house moves.
Okay.
So I think that I would probably, it sounds like you've got a good knowledgeable builder to work with up there,
mm-hmm.
is what they can do is they can actually link the new slab to your old slab mechanically
okay.
so that they move together.
Okay.
Because you don't want differential movement because then all kinds of interesting things are going to happen.
Okay.
But as long as that is correctly engineered, and then you want to make sure that you've got a good thermal break on the new slab,
okay.
You can build that to meet the current Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code.
Okay. So that's going to be just a whole lot cheaper than obviously putting a new foundation under the old house, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Many orders of magnitude less expensive.
Okay.
And if you wanted to, you can have that new portion of the slab designed for two levels as well, if you wanted to make the addition two stories.
Well, see, we had actually considered an option such as that, going down a second story, you know, putting in a basement.
Mm-hmm.
But then they said they needed to be 5 feet away from the existing building that doesn't have a basement. In order to go down, and we don't have, you know, we've got probably 12 feet between our yard and the next yard. So, you know, we're talking a small addition over there, and, you know, if we put that second, you know, the basement in, we're not going to get much of a basement. But is that also something like a code where you can't put your basement right next to your existing?
No. I don't know why. I'm not sure where the 5 feet would come from.
I could give you a pretty good guess. It's probably because when he's digging the hole, he's worried about damaging your existing foundation because he has to dig a hole for the new frost footings.
Yep.
That would be my guess.
Okay.
Is your contractor a structural engineer, or does he have a structural engineering background?
I'm sure he does. He's done lots of homes and things, remodeling and building, so he's done plenty in the area and stuff, and he's just coming back now because we had to rethink all of this, and we know that was one of the questions, you know, that we had about if we just went off in a direction that we weren't really considering going, but now it's plan B, if it was going to be really expensive or we should just go ahead and say, do the basement, you know, that kind of thing, so...
Well, If I could make a recommendation about a structural engineer, I think this might be a good project to, if your contractor is not a stamped structural engineer, you might want to have his plan be reviewed and by somebody that has some experience in this and does have a stamped structural engineering. He's a certified structural engineer is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And, you know, that's not to take anything away from your contractor.
Right.
It sounds like he knows what he's doing. But,
right.
You know, you want to make sure you do it right and you want to do it cost effectively. And in spending, you know, a few to several hundred dollars on an engineer is probably very well spent.
Okay. That sounds very great. Thanks.
All right, Jane.
Good luck to you.
Thanks very much. Good luck to you. And Dana will come up next. Our guests are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates in Fitchburg. And we're going next to Russ in Lake Mills. And Russ, what's on your mind today?
I just heard you guys get off the phone with a lady about redoing her basement. I picked it up in the middle of your conversation, but... You told her to power wash her basement walls, but she's got to take it one step further. She'll get the surface of the mildew or the mold off of it, but you got to kill the spores. Otherwise, what happens is that the spores will regenerate under the painted surface,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll bleed through the paint. So you got to use a product. I've been using the BioClean. It's come out. That's supposed to work. It's a biodegradable, very friendly product to use. So especially if you're using it on the inside of the house.
And that's to kill the mildew.
Yeah, to get rid of the spores part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one, but this is probably a little bit harsher. It's made out of by a company called American Building Restoration, or ABR. They're out of Franklin, Wisconsin, Milwaukee area. That stuff is a little bit harsher as far as smell and reaction to skin and stuff like that.
that also works very well to kill that. I'd recommend that more on the outside to do that stuff.
But John, you were nodding your head about hearing those products.
Well, ABR makes some very fine products, and they're designed for Wisconsin. Unless this basement has some very significant mold problems, though, I'm not sure that we actually need to apply a chemical. The thing is that mold has to have three things to live. It has to have air, it has to have water, but also has to have food. And if you get the dirt out of a concrete block, mold is not going to live on a concrete, inside a concrete block. Most of the silicate-based paints also fill the pores very well. So they are going to do a very good job of sealing. Now, I didn't get the idea from our caller that she had significant mold problems, and I think we're more being cautious. So Russ is correct if she has significant surface mold that maybe is causing some problems, but if it's simply a wall with paint and some dirt and the usual surface mold, which we have in every basement, I'm not sure that we need to use a bio cleanser.
Russ, thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you and for your suggestion as well. And let's pick up Janice next in Antigo. Janice, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. We are putting an addition on our home, and the existing wall, which was then the outside wall, had barn boards on the top. And when they put the drywall up, it rubbed on the barn board. Now, how can I get that dust off of there without making a big mess?
Just the drywall dust on your barn boards?
Yeah.
Oh, a little bit of soap and water will take it right off.
Just scrub it off.
Yeah, just scrub it right off. You might even be able to do it with just a damp sponge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It'll come right off.
Okay, we didn't want to mess anything up.
So. No, you won't be.
No, it's pretty easy to clean off. It's horrible dust. It gets everywhere, but it's fairly easy to clean up.
Yeah, my husband just said they tried it with a brush and it didn't come off. So
the edge of the drywall.
Yeah, the edge of the drywall scraped it as it went up. So
well, try it with a little bit of soap and water.
Soap and water,
and
okay.
See how that does.
Okay.
All right, Janice. Thanks very much.
You want to add some?
You can also try a little bit of vinegar as
vinegar
well.
Work,
because
yeah.
What's up there is probably calcium sulfate powder, and the vinegar is probably going to dissolve it.
There you go.
But
that's
be careful. Better. Do a test spot first, so it doesn't change the color of those barn boards.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point.
Ken Adams, John Freiberger, our guests as we talk about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. I'm Jim Packard. Steve Williams is our on-air producer today, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And if you'd like to join the conversation, lines are full at the moment, but the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's go back to the phones to Dana in Cedarburg. Hello, Dana.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Basement question again.
All right.
A couple questions. The first one is, in my basement, the unfinished part, I have a block basement. The walls were painted, and about the first 2 feet off the floor, it seems to be the first layer of the paint and then like the layer of concrete or whatever that the paint was on is crumbling, and you can just brush it off with your fingers. And I was wondering what might be causing that.
How old is your house,
Dana? I think the early 70s, 1970s.
Well, concrete blocks ain't what they used to be, are they, Ken? They were really good in the 50s, and concrete blocks have gotten lighter and lighter. If the concrete itself is crumbling, that is unusual, though, even for a modern concrete masonry unit foundation.
Is it just the surface?
Like the first layer. Underneath that, it seems to be.
So just a little scale on top, sort of?
Yeah.
Do you know what type of paint was applied there, Dana?
I have no idea. I think it was done when the house was built.
Yeah. One thing that Ken and I are always cognizant of is that any time you paint a concrete block foundation wall, there's going to be pressure. And it could be that they used a paint that had a really good bonding agent in it so that the paint and the surface of the block really became solid. And then what happened is you got some vapor pressure or actual water pressure in the basement. Well, it had to find a relief, and it couldn't blow the paint off the block, so it actually blew the top surface off of the block if it's just thin scale. If the paint in the rest of the basement is really sticking well and not flaking and rubbing off, I think that may be the what's happening.
Okay. Is there a way to make it look better again?
Well, yes, there is. One can repaint it, and one can use one of these silicate-based paints, but the problem that we're going to have is that may very well happen again. Now, do you know if your house has a drain tile and a sump pit and pump?
It does have a sump pump and pit. I don't know about the drain tile.
Okay. Well, it usually in 1971, if it has one, it has the other. What concerns me is when we see that happening at the bottom of the wall, that's usually what we call hydrostatic head pressure. It's basically water pressure in the ground that is trying to get out, and that's the reason why we have drain tile and a sump pit. So similar to what we suggested to one of our first callers today, to Diane, I think it was, is we may have to take a look and see if your drain tile are still working.
Okay.
If a correct silt sock wasn't put on them, or if sometimes we find that they've just collapsed. The PVC ones certainly aren't as strong as the old tile and concrete. So let's find out first if we've got some water problems and try to solve the water problems. And you heard all Ken had to say earlier about making sure the gutters are good, you have the things sloped away from the house. Mm-hmm. Let's try to make sure that that's going to stay relatively dry, and then you can, again, go to your local brickyard or lumber yard and talk to them about a good silicate-based paint.
Okay. The next question I have is part of our house, which I'm assuming was added on after they originally built the house, is on a slab. They bumped out about 8 feet in the bedroom and in the kitchen, and also just like maybe 3 feet, 2 to 3 feet in the living room where the fireplace is. And it seems to be settling, like, a lot. For example, they put in new wood floor above the slab in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. You can tell because it looks totally different. Like, they put white oak in, and the rest of the bedroom is red oak. And in between the pieces of wood, there's like, I want to say an eighth of an inch in between.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines. And then the next line, there's just like half of that. And then the rest of it is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what's going on there.
Is there any other indication that it might be, sinking? Or...
Well, it kind of feels like it's angled down a little bit in the wood about a foot back from that towards the original part of the house. There's like a bump.
Okay, are you having any problems with any windows or doors in your addition closing correctly, or?
They're casement windows. I don't think we've had any problems with them.
Well, if there's no other indication, I'm not so sure that that's what's happening. I know quite often people will tie a new addition into an old house, and they'll put a hardwood floor in, and when they first put it in, the moisture content might be fairly high, or they compared to the old floor, and as the house dries out, the some of the wood will start to show spaces in between them.
There's also in the living room where they just refinished the whole room with a brand new wood floor along that same line. It did the same thing.
So maybe there is some movement there. Is it on a frost footing?
Dana thinks it might be a slab. I'm going to plug a home inspection here.
Yeah, this might be a home inspection job. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one can always hire a structural engineer, but it might be a lot less expensive to contact. You're in the Milwaukee area, so you have a large number of home inspectors from whom to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And home inspectors often are willing to come out and just look at a portion of your house. And I think the thing to do would be to have them come out and describe to you what you have for a foundation and a structure. And I would expect in an hour to 2 hours of their time, they should be able to do that. If you go to the website of the National Association of Home Inspectors or to the website of the American Society of Home Inspectors, you'll get a list of Milwaukee inspectors who are both certified or licensed, registered with the state of Wisconsin, and are also a member of a professional organization. And my guess is that's going to give you 100 people to talk to.
Yeah,
but have them come out and take a look at not only the second problem we talked about, but also take a look at this basement. Mm-hmm. And if you describe them on the phone what services you're looking for, I think you'll be able to get that done at quite a reasonable cost.
Okay. All right, thank you. I do have one more quick question about
sure.
the wood in this room.
Mm-hmm.
How I said it was two different types of wood.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the wood, the new area that they installed was like a pre-finished
okay.
Wood, and it has the same shape as the original wood floor, but is there a way to get those to be the same color?
Well, it depends. If the pre-finished material can be sanded down and stained or finished to match the existing, and it has to, two things have to happen. One is it can't be a thin plywood veneer that can't be sanded. So I don't know. Your inspector will be able to tell you probably if that can be sanded down. If it can and they're both oak, you should be able to. And there's a chance that they put maple in there or something, which is a very...
I was told that they were both oak.
Okay. And one was just has a really light finish on it, and the other one has more of a golden color to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a matter of refinishing it. So you may be able to sand it down. Some of the pre-finished floors will be sold. They'll say you can sand it three times, or you can sand it two times, or, you know, you can't sand it at all. And, I don't know what your floor is, but you could find that out by looking at a profile of it. And maybe that gap will give you a good place to look, if maybe your inspector will be able to see right into that. But I just wanted to say something that speak to what John just said. Home inspectors are not just for people who are buying or selling a home. If you're not really confident in your abilities to understand how your house functions, you can hire a home inspector to come in, and they can help you determine what needs to be done in your house, what will need to be done in the future, and help you set up a plan of attack for maintenance. Because as a contractor, I see a lot of projects that people let go for way too long, and if they have a plan of action, they could save themselves time, money, and headaches over time. So thought I'd just give that plug back to you, Jen.
And John, again, what were those two sources? The National Association of Home Inspectors?
And also the American Society of Home Inspectors are the two main professional organizations. And Jim, the state of Wisconsin, to stay registered with the state, you have to do roughly 20 hours a year of continuing education. But most of the professional societies include other education as well. Plus, they have their own tests. They will actually review people's reports. So by going with the professional societies, you may get a little bit more than somebody who simply is state registered.
Dane, thank you very much for your call. And on to Jill in Stoughton. Jill, what's on your mind today?
Well, I have a leaky basement, and my concern is I'm pretty sure that it's probably a landscaping issue outside. It just comes in one corner of the basement. What I'm concerned about is that I may contact five different folks, have them come out, and they'll have five different ideas about what to do and five different prices. What are some things I should either ask, or who are the best sources to get at a problem like this?
Well, to start with, there are certain logical things that you want to make sure happen, and you want to make sure that the soil, the elevation, drains away from the house somehow. You want to make sure that your gutters and downspouts are work properly, and you want to make sure that any landscaping will direct water away from the house. Any incidental plantings and so forth will direct water away from the house. Beyond that, there's several different. Several different sources you could research. John, I'm drawing a blank right now on what you can do, but I'm sure you
Well, I think what you can... First, you do the things that Ken says, is you try to keep surface water away from the house. That's number one. But sometimes you have a house in soil, like you're halfway down the slope of a long hill, and there's just no way you can control the water flow from the entire neighborhood. And some of that water flow is subterranean anyway. So then you have to decide, what are your goals? if your goal is to waterproof your basement, that is a big, big deal. Mm-hmm. And is going to run you about $60 a lineal foot and involves digging up the exterior of your wall, waterproofing it, putting on drain board, and putting in a sump and collection system. Most people don't need to go that far. That's waterproofing. The next would be water collection. And this is generally a system put on the inside of the house. And most homes, it runs between $1,500 and $3,000 to come into the basement, cut about an 18-inch wide cut all the way around the basement, dig out the dirt, and put a water collection system into that to a sump pit, and then cement back in the floor. So your basement's going to continue to leak, but this is going to collect water both coming down the wall and water that is going to try to come up through the joint between the footing and the floor. These can be put in as either complete basements, or if you just have one area, you can get that one area done.
John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates in Madison is involved with historic restoration water issues and is a licensed home inspector. And Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction specializes in residential renovation projects. We'll hear more from them. Take more of your calls coming up after the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us today. We're talking about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues with John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg and Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. Gentlemen, again, thank you very much for spending time with us today. And our lines are full, but let me give you the numbers. When someone hangs up, you'll be able to jump in. In Madison, it's 263-1890, and otherwise it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. As I mentioned, the lines are full, so let's go to them and to Vivian in Green Bay. And Vivian, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I have a sort of a floating bump out in the living room area. About 3 feet bumped out from the side of the house. And it is supported by two rather elongated wooden boxes that start at the sill box and go to the outside. And I've had some mouse problems in there, and that has alerted me to the fact that maybe there should be some preservatives. This is a wooded area, and there's a lot of humidity in that area. And should those elongated boxes be insulated in any way?
Yes. It sounds like, Vivian, what you probably have is a cantilever where you have a bay that's out past your house foundation by about 3 feet.
Yep.
And there's probably joists that run back inside the basement that are supporting that. Now, how much clearance is there between the bottom of that bay and the soil?
Probably a foot.
That's good. If you have 6 to 8 inches, that is going to give you pretty good airflow. Now, usually the bottoms of those are closed off, depending upon how old your house is, with something like plywood. And, of course, if the mice find a little crack, they're going to come chewing their way through. You might want to have a contractor redo that with a cementous product like a sheet of hardy plank that's made out of concrete that the mice are not going to get through. And while that is off, you could go ahead and that either should be packed full of fiberglass insulation, or better yet, it could be filled with a spray foam insulation, which will give you tremendous seal against any thermal movement and against air movement.
Okay. All right. So where would this concrete board go?
It would be the bottom. So if you were laying on your back on the ground looking up at it, you would be under there.
It would be the floor of the...
Well, it would be below the floor. It would be the first thing you would see above the ground.
Okay.
And this will then keep the mice out, because once the mice make a hole in there, they can just get into the joists and come into the basement and the rest of the house.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's see what's on Roger's mind in Milwaukee. Hello, Roger.
Hello. We're looking into what they call a cut log home, which is 6x8. Solid pine log cut square, 6x8.
Mm-hmm.
And after, I know there's going to be movement because of the moisture, but if I want to drywall any of the interior walls on the inside of the log, how long do they think it'll take before that'll quit moving? And also, before the chinking is put in, do you treat the inside with that, you know, they got a spray oil base, I think they're spraying it with. And is that sprayed before the chinking is put in or after the chinking? And also, if they know what the R factor, that 8-inch log, would be.
What sort of pine is this, Roger?
White pine.
It is white pine. Is it? Okay, is it, so it's from Michigan or northern Wisconsin, northern Michigan?
Central Wisconsin.
Central Wisconsin. Okay, great. So if it's real white pine, then we've got a pretty good resistance then to decay. You know, certainly much better than things like lodgepole pine or most of the southern pines. If this is a dry site and there's good airflow around it, you don't necessarily need a preservative on it. What you do need to be sure of is that you've got these logs or these squares pretty well dry before they go up.
And I know they're not. They're put up. The minute they come off at a sawmill, they're put up.
Okay. That can create problems because you can get quite a bit of movement. And if you want, you can call the Forest Products Lab here in Madison, Wisconsin. They have a consumer line, and they can tell you how much this is going to move because they know how. If you can test what the moisture content is now, and it's probably between 22% and 30%, and it's probably going to dry down to 12% over the years, probably in between 3 and 4 years, Forest Products Lab can tell you how much it's going to move, but it is going to be fairly significant. It could be, it could, I'm just guessing, and I want you to call Forest Products Lab to know for sure, but you could see a half-inch change in dimension. Now, you probably notice that where they're going to put the windows and doors in, there's actually a slip joint that's going to be put in for your windows and doors. If there isn't, you want to make sure there is. If you want to do a general check on the log plans, the best thing to take a look at is the Canadian Mortgage Association, which is sort of like our version of HUD, publishes a log home construction guideline that they use in Canada. You know, in Canada, everything's got to be quite a bit tougher than in the U.S. because of the how wretchedly cold their winters can be. And I would get a hold of that publication, which I think you can probably get quite easily and perhaps even online from, I believe it's the CMHA. And then I would read through that and then see if that brings up some other questions you want to ask your contractor.
Okay. All righty.
Okay.
Do they also treat the spray the inside of that oil base?
I'd be real concerned with treating the inside. What they are going to have to do is you have to have decay-resistant wood where it meets your foundation. And so that, depending upon how decay-resistant your wood is probably going to have to be treated. Now, a log home does have to meet the Uniform Dwelling Code. And the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code actually cites this Canadian publication for some of its... for some of the rules that are to be followed. So find out if he's planning to treat the entire wall, because I don't know why he would, although his interpretation of code, which may be the correct one, is that the lower portions of the wall where they contact the foundation do indeed have to be treated.
Okay.
All right, Roger. Thanks very much, and good luck to you. Let's go to Kathy next in Pulaski. And Kathy, what's on your mind today?
Hi. We have a walkout ranch home that has two finished bedrooms in the lower level, and we're having problems with sound transmission to those lower bedrooms. And the problem is so bad that you can literally hear a cat walk across the kitchen floor when you're in one of those lower rooms. Those rooms are fully plastered, so we're not anxious to do anything to those ceilings, but we are thinking about changing our kitchen floor. We have a vinyl product that needs replacement, and we are wondering if there's something we can do to affect the problem. I've been looking into some products called mass-loaded vinyls that they say you can lay down under an underlayment and before you would put vinyl on top of that underlayment. And I would just like to know if they're aware of those products or if they have other options we should be looking at.
Well, first of all, one nice thing about taking the floor up is that you'll have access to the subfloor. So if you want to put some sound-absorbing insulation in, you could do it from the top without... damaging the ceiling below. So that could help reduce but not eliminate a lot of the sound. Above that, now I don't know much about the sound absorption qualities of some of these products, but I'm sure John does, because he's looking at me nodding and smiling. So, but there are other things you can do to eliminate sound, or to at least reduce the amount of sound in the basement. We might talk about that after John's done, but why don't you take it from here?
Well, in a house, there isn't a lot you can do, but there are indeed sound mats that you can use with the underlayment. The sound is coming two ways. One is it's coming through the air, and Ken's right. You can put insulation like a layer of low-density and a layer of high-density foam in the void, which will help absorb and reflect sound back to the kitchen. But it also transfers through the solid structure, so it's going through the floor, into the joists, into the plaster, and out. And that is where the sound mat underlayments really help. The vinyls rely upon their mass to actually absorb some of the sound, so those can help as well. So between the two of them, there's a lot of products out there now because we're building so many condominiums now. Mm-hmm. And when people buy condominiums, they really don't want to hear the neighbor's cat upstairs walking across the floor. So there are a lot of good products out there that your contractor should be able to find for you, and you can do further research online.
If there's something you want to do in the basement, if after you take care of the floor and insulate the cavity, it's still too noisy, there are channels that you can install over the top of your existing plaster or drywall, if it's drywall, and then put another layer of 5/8 drywall underneath that, and that creates an airspace, and that helps absorb some more sound. So if sound is really an issue, you can go that far. There are other things you can do beyond that as well, and that's they have these, instead of a metal channel, they have these sound absorbing channels that you could put on. And now we're getting into recording studio stuff, so you don't really need to go that far unless sound is a real big issue for you.
Okay, thank you for your help.
Okay, Kathy, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. Our guests are Ken Adams and John Freiberger as we talk about home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And let's go to Art in Merrill next. And what's on your mind today?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I bought my house my house was built in 1979. It has a concrete block basement that's not finished. And it was previously a leaking basement, but I ran some downspout extensions out and solved that problem. But now the basement's cracking along where the mortar is between the concrete blocks. So I'm wondering if I can just buy some of that like spackling compound and press that in there, or do I need professional help?
John?
These are horizontal cracks, vertical cracks, or are they what we call step cracks or stairway cracks?
They're like a stairway crack that maybe goes two blocks at the most, a little bit longer.
Okay,
maybe.
Only two blocks at the most. And are they near the corners or mid-wall?
They're mid-wall.
They're mid-wall. And do you know how long your walls are?
That I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Well, I suppose it's just a two-bedroom house, so maybe 80 or 90 feet.
Okay, those are long walls. Are there pilasters in your basement or some other mass that is helping to support these long walls?
I don't know what a pilaster is, but I don't think there's anything along.
It's just a straight wall is what you're seeing.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little surprised that a house to have that long and unsupported wall in 1979. What we do find in these very long, old cement block walls is cement block is not terribly strong. And if we get some cracks in the mortar, that it's often due to lateral soil pressure, where the soil is really trying to move. Soil is trying to fill in your basement, basically. And I think the first thing I would do is I would check to see if there's any bows in the wall. And you can do this yourself. Just go to the hardware store, get 100 foot of string, have somebody hold it dead tight in a corner, and then you move it towards the other corner, and if it hits the middle of the wall before you hit the corner, you know you've got some bowing going on. If you do have some bowing going on, then you're going to want to have an engineer look at it. There are some very simple fixes called flexial members that we frequently use for retrofitting. So if you check it out and there isn't a bow, then a little bit of concrete patch from the hardware store should work out fine. If there is a big bow, then you want to think about it, talking to an engineer. You said it used to leak quite a bit, Art, and what I'm a little concerned with is that back before you did the grading, extended the downspouts, the soil was pretty wet, and wet soil can exert twice as much a lateral load as dry soil. And so that wet soil, before you get everything taken care of, may have shifted those walls a little bit. And we want to make sure they don't shift anymore. So check them out. Make sure that they're plumb, true, and straight first. If they are, no problem. Do a little minor repair. If there is a problem, get it fixed now, inexpensively, before you have a bigger one.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Art, good luck. Thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Tom, who's in Marshfield. And Tom, what can we do for you?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. It's another basement question. I'm looking at purchasing a house, and it's got a wooden basement. Now, this is a bi-level house, so about 4 feet of the basement sits underground, and it's a heavy red clay soil. Are there concerns with these? Have they held up, or have they been major problems?
Well, they are still in the Uniform Dwelling Code. We've had 20-some years' experience with them in the code, and we've had over 53 years' experience with Forest Products Lab House. If they're built correctly, they do just fine. The problem is I've never been terribly happy with the code because the code does not require that they be waterproofed. All the code says is you have to put a layer of visqueen around the outside of them. Okay. Basically what they are is they're 2x6s, 2x8s, or 2x10s, depending upon how high the basement is, how high the unbalanced fill is. And as long as the wood was sized correctly, the nails were installed correctly, the plywood was treated, and decay hasn't begun, the walls are just fine. About 50% of the ones I've seen have at least partially failed. And the big problem tends to be water. The water comes in and the nails or the other fasteners start rusting, things start moving. I've found them where the stud portions are slipping right off the plate. I found them where the plates weren't well attached. You said you're thinking of buying this house, Tom, so you're going to want to have your hire a home inspector who really knows something about wood foundations. And I believe you can get a copy of the wood foundation report from the National Forest Products Lab here in Madison again. And if you call their consumer number, they are just immensely helpful.
Okay. Now, when we looked at the house, the basement was completely dry. It's been finished. There's no indication of water leakage. But other than that, I don't know. Would you have to open a wall to see if the 2x6, I think they're 2x8 stud walls that are below grade, to see if they've slipped off of their plate? Are these things on top of cement, or are they on top of crushed gravel? How do they sit?
Generally, they are on top of cement, and the plate is very securely fastened. Now, you shouldn't have to open anything up. In fact, a home inspector isn't allowed to open anything up. But simply by using a level and a laser, they're going to be able to tell whether the current walls are plumb and true. If there is no sign of moisture coming out of them, if there's no sign of structural movement, that's a pretty good indicator. The inspector should also look at the outside and try to determine what is on these walls as far as a water barrier. And you may find that this is a house that was built with a complete bitumen water barrier on it, which would be absolutely great. You also want to make sure that there's a pretty good indication that the drain tile are functioning well on it. Again, these are all things, as long as you hire a home inspector who's had some experience with wood foundations, without doing anything extraordinary at all, they should be able to give you, well, it's not their job to guarantee things, but no. They should be able to tell you that there is no sign of any significant problems with it.
Okay, so long-term durability on the wood basements goes back, what, 50 years, you said, at the one in Madison?
I believe the one in Madison was built in 1953. Mm-hmm. The wood is the old treated wood, the stuff you can't get anymore, uh-huh. was guaranteed against decay for 40 years. So the minimum life on them should have been 40 years. But with a good water barrier, there's no particular reason why they couldn't go 50, 60, 70, or 80 years.
Okay.
That's why I think the water barrier is important.
Is the key.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. Well, I certainly appreciate your call. I was a little hesitant about going any further with this house because all of my experience has been with concrete basements. So consequently, when I saw this had a wooden basement, it raised some questions. And I certainly appreciate your help.
All right, Tom. Good luck to you. Thanks. Thanks for the call. And on to Christine in Dodgeville. Christine, what can we do for you?
Hi, I'm a new homeowner. We've never bought a house, and we bought one. And we have fiberglass insulation in the ceilings in the basement. We're going to be doing a family room this summer. And I've had contractors come in, and they were saying about doing the drywalling in the basement. What do you think of that idea?
About drywalling the basement ceiling?
Yeah.
Is it dry?
I'm not sure. The house is 22 years old.
I mean, many people finish the ceilings in their basement if they're going to be putting a family room down there. What are you going to do for walls, dude?
I don't know. You got any good ideas? We're a first-time homeowner.
Okay.
And when we bought the house, we have no furnace, electric heat only.
Oh, my. When was the house built?
22 years ago.
Okay, so it's not very old, and it's a cement foundation, concrete foundation?
Yeah. I've had contractors come in, and they're telling me $1,000 to do the basement.
Seems pretty reasonable.
Doesn't sound out of line.
So,
now, what would they do for this $1,000?
They would do drywalling.
Okay, so they're just going to drywall the ceiling? Is
that
the idea?
Yeah, I have fiberglass insulation right now, but my mother's allergic to it in the ceiling, in the basement.
And you're not going to insulate the walls or anything?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Christine, you still have the electric heat. Are you going to be replacing that with something that's less expensive to operate?
No, we applied for, energy assistance. We got denied.
Oh.
Okay.
The electric heat's very expensive.
Yeah, my guess is, most people don't insulate their basement ceilings if they have forced air heat, but with a house that's electrically heated, what they're probably doing is they're trying to keep the heat upstairs because it is so expensive.
Yeah, one guy was talking about doing registers in the walls.
Heat registers, you mean changing your heat to forced air?
Yeah.
I think, Christine, when I do home inspections for people, we always talk about 10-year plans. And I ask people to figure out everything they're going to do to that house in 10 years and to do a little research before they do anything. And if you end up changing this to a forced air system with a high-efficiency gas furnace, then you take that fiberglass insulation, you throw it away, and then it isn't an allergy problem. If you were denied for energy assistance, talk to Wisconsin Focus on Energy. Wisconsin Focus on Energy. You can get them online. If you switch from high-cost electric heat to low-cost gas heat, you may be able to get a decent grant from Focus on Energy because you're going to be using producing so much less greenhouse gas.
Okay, can I get that online, computer?
Yes, you just go to Focus on Energy and you'll find it right there.
Okay.
So do some researching first. I don't think you've got a system that long-term makes a lot of sense because you're paying three times as much for a BTU for electricity as you would for natural gas. Now, maybe if you're out in the country in LP, it's not quite that great a difference. But sit down and do some research. Actually list what you're going to do with the house in the next 10 years. Look at your paybacks. Look for all possibilities for grants before you do anything.
Okay. Yeah. And then I've got mold on my patio doors. How do you get rid of mold?
You know, in 10 seconds, you have to answer this question, Ken.
A good simple solution would be to take a 10% bleach solution and 10% bleach, 90% water, wipe it down, let it dry, and that should kill it.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Christine. I'm sorry we can't get to the other callers who are waiting online, but we've run out of time. And Ken and John, thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks.
Look
Real
forward
pleasure.
To another appearance down the road. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. Our thanks to Steve Williams for on-air phone production. Tomorrow at 11, it'll be Garden Talk and Dick John Dagg, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin, celebrating their 100th year in business, will be along to take your calls and answer your questions. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.